Good evening. It's great to see so many people here, and welcome to another EG Question Time. I'm Damien Wild, Editor-in-Chief of EG, and it's great to be back with Sheffield Question Time for a second year. We were a few miles down the road last year in Rotherham, but it's great to be here in the heart of the city, to borrow a phrase. So before we embark on what will be a Question Time first tonight, and I'll explain more in a second, I'll explain how this works briefly. I'm sure you all know, but some of you have pre-submitted questions. Thank you for those. I'll come to you in due course for those. I'm sure you're poised. If you do want to make a point, you can raise your hand. The old-fashioned way works. Ask a question, disagree with the panel, disagree with me, if you like. But you can also do it on your phone. So if you get your phones out and go to slido.com and use the hashtag EGQT, it's up there. You can ask questions digitally there as well. You can do so anonymously, preferably not, but if that makes you feel more comfortable, panel, the questions will be filtered before they make it up there. So make them appropriate. And you can also like questions to ensure those questions get to the top that you want to hear asked. And also, if you're tweeting about tonight, use that same hashtag, EGQT. I'll introduce our panel in a moment, and I'm assured that they're robust and they want to be challenged as well, so please do go ahead. But I did mention a first tonight, and I usually ask the questions at events like this, and to be honest, it's much easier than answering them. But tonight, I was persuaded to answer some questions on my behalf and EG's behalf as well about perceptions of Sheffield. And it was Alexis Cratchai, Managing Director of Counter Context, who talked me into it. And Alexis is going to ask those questions. So Alexis, I'd ask the audience to be challenging, but please be gentle. Do you want to come here?
This seemed like a good idea when we talked about it.
That was a few weeks ago.
And suddenly I realized I'm not Andrew Neil. I don't know how I'm supposed to look at you when we do that.
I think we face down. Let's turn in slightly.
So firstly, thank you very much for coming to Sheffield.
It's great to be here.
You've beaten Boris Johnson, that you've turned up for an interview. You're going to be asked questions.
I'm not happy with that parallel.
No, I thought I'd just get that out first. Many of the people in this room are members, their organisations are members of the Property Association. So I'm not going to ask questions on their behalf, but I am going to kind of focus the questions from the perception of the association. We're a city that is quite, in many ways, modest. We keep ourselves to ourselves. We're perhaps not as expansive as our friends to the west and our friends to the north. So the first question I had for you, and I think a lot of people are interested in this, is what's the perception of Sheffield outside of Sheffield in terms of your organisation, your platform, indeed you personally? You're talking to a lot of people. You're looking at what international investors, domestic investors are interested in. Is Sheffield part of that debate? And if it is, what is the perception of our city right now?
Do you want me to say what I think the audience might want to hear, or do you want me to give a...
We like candour.
Okay, I'll be candid. I've been thinking about this, and if I'm allowed to mention Labour's left, right...
Of course you are.
..and all other places.
We don't seek to compete, we just seek to differentiate.
Good. Well, I'll give you some perceptions, and I've tried to quantify. It's quite difficult to quantify, but I'll try to. Sheffield doesn't figure in many of the conversations I have, to be honest. It does more than it did perhaps a few years ago, but if I compare it to some other cities, not so much. And if I think about those 10 core UK cities, you know, Manchester, we've been doing Question Time events for 8 or 9 years and events around the country in various cities for at least as long. And the conversations I have at home and abroad, of those core cities, Manchester figures very prominently, Birmingham figures very prominently, Leeds figures more prominently today than it did a few years ago. Then there are other cities that I think are gathering a little bit of momentum and perhaps crop up for different reasons from time to time. And there I think it's probably Bristol and Edinburgh. And then you have the other core cities like Sheffield, like Nottingham, like Newcastle, Cardiff as well, which figure less prominently. And I'd put Sheffield in that group. So it's the bottom half of the table, I'd say. But it's not just the core cities. No. You know, you also have the likes of Cambridge. You know, you have the likes of Dublin, Amsterdam, and all other cities where that competition is pretty intense. But I think Sheffield has done some things very well, and I'm not just saying this because you're asking me the question, but I think the Sheffield Property Association is a great initiative. You know, and I think it was very smart to draw on the experience of the Westminster and City Property Associations in London there aren't any others as well, but they do that job pretty well. And I think that alignment, working with them at MIPIM and other places, has been quite powerful and has helped raise that game. So I hope if you were to ask me back next year and ask me that question, I'd be, you know, pushing you up towards the top half. But if I'm being honest, it's the bottom half of the core cities.
It's important to kind of reflect on that. The kind of talking about bottom half, top half. As a Sheffield Wednesday fan, it pains me to say this, but there's another team, a two-bit team in the city that's doing quite well at the moment. So if Sheffield's going to be Premier League, if we're going to really think about how we, and we talk about this a lot in the Property Association, how do we attract good quality capital? How do we attract exceptional occupiers? And how do we attract and retain talent? How do we wrap that up? How do we get up the table? Because one of the things that the Property Association was founded on is equal measures of ambition, but also frustration. We didn't set up the association to organise cocktail receptions. We organised it to attract talent, capital, interest. So from your vantage point, as recognised we've only got short time this evening, what should we do? What would you do?
It's tricky. I think, you know, it's some things are very much more easily said than done. And it probably, you know, these acronyms always help as well. So, you know, TLC matters, you know, talent, leadership and connectivity. And I think talent, it's attracting talent and retaining talent. Great universities here. Other cities have great universities as well. But it's about keeping that talent and then attracting new talent, occupiers and you know, the very bright people that that make them thrive. Leadership is vital. It needs to come from the private sector, but I think successful cities have leadership from the public sector as well, which isn't necessarily about money. Money helps, of course, and it'll be interesting to get some views later about, you know, maybe the city has relied on public sector cash a little too much, more than others, perhaps, but I'll get the perception later of that. And then connectivity comes down to two things. Transport, of course, both east and west, and talking to some people this evening, those journeys can be frustrating, particularly mine was a long journey up from London today. It was about 25% longer than it should have been. And digital connectivity, of course. And what frustrated me most of that journey was trying to get online, which was extremely painful. That said, I think there have been surveys that, you know, suggested that Sheffield is very much better connected digitally than most other cities. I think, you know, relative to its size, it sees digital activity and digital conversation as much as anyone outside London. I think Liverpool was the other leading city there, and I think Sheffield led the way on Twitter. So get those things right and you've got a good head start. Then you've got to differentiate yourself from others who are doing it well as well, and find something to trade on and trade off.
That's helpful. Just as we conclude, because there's far more erudite speakers than me to be on the panel this evening, the Property Association invested last year in this event, and we've invested in this event tonight. And I'm confident we're going to keep making those investments on behalf of the membership, because this is a really important moment to ask questions of ourselves as a city. So it's genuinely appreciated that we kind of invented this idea, but your position as a key market commentator and observer, we've got to keep checking in to look at how are we being perceived. And in terms of that leadership, and this is my only call to arms, and it's probably perhaps overly bold, there are some people here with some real influence within the public sector, John being one of them. But when we talk about leadership, it's not going to come from anybody else other than the people in this room. So if we talk about how do we attract that talent, how do we attract capital, it's going to be everybody in this room who's going to do that. And hopefully the Property Association can continue to be a focal point for those people who want to make that happen. And every year you can come and mark our exam paper and see how we're getting on. But we've only got a short time. I think that might have worked. Nobody's fallen asleep yet, but hopefully they're now primed to listen to the main panellists. So thank you very much, Damien.
OK, thanks, Alex. Right, now for the easier part of my job this evening. I'm glad that's over. I hope it's OK. Let me know. OK, let's get down to the debate, and I'd like to invite the panel up. So don't you know, we could play simply the best and invite you up individually, but in the interest of time, let's get you up collectively in that order. So furthest from me is Kelly Hatton, real estate partner at Shoesmiths. Next to her is David Topham, chief executive of CTP and founding member of the Sheffield Property Association. Kevin McCabe in the centre is chairman of Scarborough Group International. John Mothersole is chief executive of Sheffield City Council. And closest to me is Max Mason, head of sales at 574. Something else has just popped into my head, which I'll mention quickly, which perhaps quantifies the the level of conversation around Sheffield that I see, which I should have mentioned to Alexis. But I did some counts on our website, EGI Now Radius, earlier, in terms of how many mentions Sheffield has got relative to some other cities over the 20 years that we've been going. And Sheffield was at, 4,000 articles came up when I plugged in Sheffield, which sounds pretty good. Birmingham, 8,000. Leeds, 13,000. And Manchester, 17,000. So maybe we're getting it wrong. I'll accept that, but I think that maybe, quantifies it a little bit. I won't say how many London got, but it was more than those combined. Right. So tonight we're talking about Sheffield, a heart of steel or technology. And I'm sure we'll talk about much more besides. I said I'd like to take questions from the audience. I've got plenty. Yours will be better, I'm sure. But I'll start with one from the audience. And I hope that Sam Lode is here. Sam? Great. I think a microphone will find you very quickly.
Good evening. My question is to the panel generally. Given Sheffield's manufacturing heritage and engineering skills base, what's being done to attract manufacturers in the technology sectors, for example, semiconductors? And secondly, what's being done to develop the skills base required for such industries? And thirdly, what's being done to create an environment in which those industries and people flourish?
Okay, thank you. So manufacturers, skills and living and working environment, I guess. Kelly, what do you see being done to tick those boxes?
For me, I think it's about the environment piece. I think that is the focal point, really, because you're not going to get those industries unless you've got the talent and the people who want to come here, the people who want to set up the businesses, expand the businesses and live and work here. And I think a challenge for Sheffield is really finding its USP, because we do compete globally and nationally. And a lot of other cities are doing, they're trying to compete in the same industries. So I think really for Sheffield, our challenge is to say, well, what is the USP? Why are we better than Manchester or Leeds, or dare I mention those two? And for me, it's something around the well-being agenda. I think Sheffield is really unique in terms of a few different things that we've touched upon in terms of how we present the city. So we've got a tagline about the outdoor city. Now, for me, that is fantastic and plays into the well-being agenda, because we know that people, well-being is a hugely important thing in all of our businesses now. And well-being is hugely affected by being active, having a bit of headspace. So the fact that we have got the Peak District 15 minutes out of town is a huge selling point for us. Whereas contrast that with Manchester, if you want to get a job in a law firm, for example, do you pick Leeds, do you pick Manchester, do you pick Sheffield? Well, if you pick Manchester, chances are you're going to spend an hour on the M60 getting to work in the morning. Whereas Sheffield, 20 minutes, you can do the school run, you can be at your desk by 9 o'clock. So for me, it's around the well-being agenda of what is it really like to live in Sheffield. We've got the Peak District. It's a small, compact city. You can live the type of life you actually want to live here. So I'd be majoring on that rather than competing in ways that, we're not necessarily going to beat every other city. But I think we can if we package it up as a well-being experience.
Okay, thank you. David, is that enough?
No, it's not enough, because it's how we translate that, I think, into addressing those shortfalls in the city offer. And from our experience as developers, viability is a big issue in making space available for occupiers to consider the city, living space, And there is sometimes a constraint in, or feeling in the city, that density of development in the city, which I think if you want to maintain that character of the city, being compact, being accessible, particularly it has those fantastic, unique offer of the, you know, the Peak District and transport and rural, potential rural life, then the city centre needs to, I think, have a more vibrant and intense offer. And I think that's at the moment is, you know, I think in the recent past that's been a bit of a problem to be able to get that happening here.
Okay, how does that change? How do you, sorry, how do you inject intensity into the city
Well,
centre?
I think it's a slow process. I think we're waiting sometimes for viability, and, you know, I think over the next horizon, the big issue I think for our game is construction cost and how we address construction cost and how the markets are going to respond to that. You know, assuming Brexit's out of the way, I don't think that is, that's a sort of a sometimes used concern about construction costs, but I think the industry generally is moving in a trajectory which is ahead of where inflation is at, which is, means values need to move on significantly. And I think the it's the, from our knowledge and experience, I think it's the number of sort of competing projects and space that is available in the city at any one time, which sometimes I think is holding back that acceleration of values.
Okay, and can Sheffield sustain, and I hope people don't mind me swearing, I'm quoting a tweet which I saw this morning. What the fuck is wrong with Sheffield? Bar owner fumes after posting empty restaurant photo. So this was... bar owner fumes after posting empty restaurant photos. So this was James O'Hara, who owns a public cocktail bar on Surrey Street, posted a picture of an empty oysoi market on Saturday afternoon. John, do you want to take that?
Was it empty of goods or empty of people?
People.
As Sheffield's, I don't know. I mean, I think James was posting something around the business rates on his bar.
He was doing that as well.
Which, let's face it, the public bar in Sheffield voted by The Guardian last year, the best bar, this year, the best bar in the country. So what's not to like about that? You show me, you know, I can go around any city and photograph an empty shop and tweet about it. I think we need to focus on the strengths that this city's got. I don't think there's much effing wrong with Sheffield. I haven't retired yet, folks, so I just said the F word.
He said in his replies that there were not enough people trying to support new and independent businesses.
Well, you know, I've got a lot of time for James. Let's not personalise it around James. I've got a bit of an issue that if people don't go into my shop or my restaurant, is it the fault of the people or is it the fault of my shop and the restaurant? And we ain't going to change Sheffield people. There's more people moving into the city. There's nearly 600,000 people live here compared to 500,000 10 years ago. So it's a growing city. But fundamentally, you know, I think businesses, it's not a public sector comment really, but you know, businesses with full shops don't say what's wrong with people in Sheffield. People with empty shops say that. And I think there needs to be a bit of self-reflection. I don't think that's the case with James. I think he's a great entrepreneur in the city, and I don't know if he's in the audience, but you know, I admire entirely what he does.
Okay, and John, I did move it on from Sam's question, but I thought that overlapped. But what's being done about attracting manufacturers, developing skills, and creating a living and working environment that people want?
So, I mean, there's a very detailed answer to that, which I won't go into for the sake of brevity, but I want to pick up one point, which you mentioned in your Q&A with Alexis, which was about the universities in the cities, not just necessarily in Sheffield. And think about the Northern Powerhouse. Does the North have world-class universities? Yes, it does. Are universities potentially key to economic growth? Yes, they are. So why hasn't the North got a world-class economy? And that's because, in general, we haven't yet learnt how to translate the power of our universities into economic growth. In Sheffield, in advanced manufacturing, we have actually found the alchemy that takes university research into applied research, into development and into production, which is why Boeing, McLaren, Rolls-Royce and their supply chains are either here or are moving here. So one of the things that Sheffield is doing, this plays to Alexis' point about this is what Sheffield's doing, is actually understanding and exploiting the power of our universities, particularly in the areas of invention and technology. And I just want to go back to, I think, the premise that was on the invitation for tonight, which was it steel or technology?
Or technology, yes.
And I take issue with the ore bit. Is, you know, let's not obsess about steel, but is anybody making steel these days without technology? It's a division that we really, really shouldn't be talking about. And Sheffield always made its name by inventing ways of doing things and then producing them. Stainless steel was that. And that's what we are still doing across a range of sectors, including in the wellbeing sector. So I think that, well, another answer, we have two university technical colleges in this city. I think we're still the only city in the country to have two. If we want to get in rivals about this, we had two when Leeds had none. So I was in a meeting in Leeds when somebody said, what the F is Leeds not doing to have one of these? The school system in Sheffield is the as Ofsted see it, is the best it has ever been. We have got the Advanced Manufacturing Innovation District, which is Europe's potentially largest applied manufacturing district, already anchored, as you know, by the Boeings, the McLarens, the Rolls-Royce, the Airbuses, etc. But I think, as Kelly was intimating, to attract firms and talent, it's got to be the full fat offer of a city. It can't just be a sector-specific offer. And lastly, I think you mentioned semiconductors there. What we don't do, we don't produce a menu of support that's generic to all businesses, because that means it doesn't fit perfectly any business. We get to know a business strategically, and we flex what we can do.
Who's the we here, the council?
Well, the state. I tend to see us as a channel into either the city region or HM government. But we flex within resource reasonableness and the law what we can do. Sometimes it's a training need that's needed. Sometimes it's just a bit of help with planning. Sometimes it's, as is often asked, us playing our covenant in, which we're quite parsimonious at, but sometimes we do that as well. So, you know, it's not so much whatever it takes, but it's about understanding what you need as a business, not as a sector.
Okay, thank you. And Max, when I should have said 574, the online sales platform of LSH, I got there before you. I didn't mention you at all.
No.
I apologise.
You always fail to do that.
Max Mason, head of sales at 574, the online sales platform of LSH. Many, many apologies. But when you look at different cities around the country, do you see the same level of interest in Sheffield as other comparable cities?
I think that's probably, in my opinion, the big problem with Sheffield is perhaps that it doesn't seem to have got its branding right, or it's not quite perceived in the same way in the market as other cities are. You know, it's not quite a trophy city. And I, you know, it's great hearing about all these things of how Sheffield's leading the way in technology and in infrastructure or however it's leading. But, you know, I think the health and wellbeing element really comes into it. Is you have to make it more of a place that people want to come and live. But also, I think you can lead the way with a lot of big projects, but actually it's the middle element that for me really matters. And it's about reaching your standard investor in order to get the flood of investment in. It's all very well and good putting in the big ticket items, but you need the sponge of the cake, effectively, not just the icing. Made that up on the spot.
I think John liked that one.
And, you know, I think that's a bit what we're sort of trying to do. And I'm looking at this from a very different perspective to everyone else here, in that, you know, obviously I'm trying to use technology, I guess, to better reach bidders or buyers in the market and clients, and I'm doing that on a national level. We are selling something in Rotherham tomorrow, if anyone's interested. But I think what we've noticed from that is there is a real core of regional investors around here, but actually reaching out into the wider market, I'm personally not aware of too much investment from overseas or from maybe further in the south of England, where, you know, admittedly there is a lot of money actually coming into the city. And perhaps that's an idea that Sheffield need to somehow brand themselves slightly better in a way that some other cities seem to have done.
Okay, thank you. And Kevin, I came to you last because we've had a sort of regional and local perspective. I tried to give more of a national perspective, but I wanted to get an international perspective from you as someone who travels, bringing in inward investment and promoting a number of cities. How does Sheffield stack up on the international stage?
Okay.
been listening this evening, we're perhaps at times just a wee bit too negative. USP for Sheffield is definitely the universities. You can put them in the higher grade than Manchester or Leeds. And I do when I'm talking to people about Sheffield, the city. I think, you know, sometimes we can, as South Yorkshire folk, you know, be a little bit half empty in portraying the good things of the city. I don't think there's much wrong, in other words. Have you got the universities in your Sheffield Property Association? It's so important, isn't it? You know, there's so much connectivity can be done in the city itself to boost the profile, with not too much in terms of all of us when we go out and about at functions, events, business meetings, talk the city up. The infrastructure of any city in the north of England has got to be improved. Sheffield's no exception. But the infrastructure's pretty good. Train services today were poor. Damien, you broke the train down at Staveley. Okay, it was your fault, you came too early. So, in other words, there's problems with the trains. There's problems in the trains when you go to London, certainly when you go to the southwest or to Gatwick from London. Sheffield's not much wrong with it, but we do tend as Sheffield folk or South Yorkshire folk to underplay the city we live or work in. And as we compare our own group, we're active in Manchester, Leeds and Sheffield. We may at the moment have more on in Manchester than Sheffield. We don't intend to. I can see that Sheffield has pulled its socks up in recent times, the last 10, 15 years. And what you see, where we're sat at the moment, this is a wonderful, wonderful creative piece of architecture and development that works, that is profiled in. I've been to functions in other cities where this is shown. Didn't say Sheffield on the bottom. So it's done a lot of things right, and it's a big city geographically that's got potential to grow. It's not a bad city to get to a motorway, is it? The station does need to get better, doesn't it? HS2 does need to happen, doesn't it? But if we all sort of look at Sheffield itself, I'd say straight away USP is the universities. I'd say straight away, not Sheffield Wednesday. Say it. Say it. Daft as it sounds, one thing that Manchester, not Leeds, has had on Sheffield is Premier League football. Sounds crazy, doesn't it? When I go on my travels, I talk Sheffield, but I get rammed about football. And the football around the globe has made Manchester into a world city. Sheffield is not a world city. If I go into Europe, they all know of Sheffield, but I have to talk to them about it so they understand more, whereas they automatically know more about Manchester. And probably Leeds, again from past football exploits, which put them on the European map. So, but there's not much wrong. And I think we've all got this sort of commitment just to talk ourselves up rather than be a little bit too negative. Great infrastructure, great folks. You know, we are sturdy guys, aren't we?
Sorry.
We're sturdy guys. You can be a guy's a girl in this day and age. And we do talk frankly. So there's not much wrong. And, you know, Sheffield commands South Yorkshire. I know this other question, mate. Sheffield has got that heart where so many people who live in South Yorkshire work in Sheffield. How many work in Sheffield, John?
The working population is about 400,000.
Yeah, and where do they come from? It's not just the heart of the city, is it? It's from all parts which are called South Yorkshire.
John? I try not to get drawn into Leeds-Manchester debates because sometimes it takes you away from actually just being good at being Sheffield. But I've always felt that the place we ought to be in terms of the core metrics, of commercial metrics, we're not going to be a Leeds or a Manchester, so we needed to be the next city after that. And if you look what's happened positively in the Sheffield office market in the last 10 years, you know, thanks very much to these two gents on my right, not exclusively them, compared to what didn't happen in Liverpool and Newcastle and Nottingham, you actually see that on those core metrics, I appreciate in the perception league table, you're putting us in the bottom half of the eight English core cities. But if you gave me a choice, would I prefer good reality or good perception? I prefer good reality over good perception. Our challenge is actually a good challenge, is how do we turn the reality into good perception? And I would worry more if we were saying, actually, how on earth do we hide all these rather uncomfortable facts about our city? And if you go back to Kelly's point earlier, I think successful cities have to be good at everything. And they have to be excellent at the things that they can be excellent at. They have to be good at low crime. they have to be good at, etc. And you can catch a train from Sheffield Station, though it's a bit off topic here, and you go 30 miles to one of those other two cities, and your chances of being a victim of violent crime increases by four. You're four times more likely. Now, those metrics will start to matter as people make informed lifestyle choices. So, the commerciality of Sheffield, I think, for Sheffield is strong. Let's not try and be Leeds or Manchester on that, because we ain't going to get there and we'll just get disappointed. But let's make sure that in terms of the value proposition, in other words, the same quality you can get in Leeds and Manchester at better value is where we sit. And I think the facts say that's broadly where we sit. The world yet doesn't appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. I've mentioned Leeds, Manchester and the F word. Shall we go on to devolution next? Is that a... So a question here, and others have come in as well, but I'll take this one. Doncaster, Rotherham, Barnsley, why are they competing with Sheffield when we should work together? How do we sort devolution? Kevin.
Goodness knows. Look, I suppose we've had so much about devolution this last couple of weeks because of a build-up to a general election next Thursday.
I suppose before that question, does devolution matter? Would it make a material difference to turning reality into perception, for instance?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, Doncaster, Rotherham, Barnsley have been the big towns around the big city of Sheffield, and it seems to me it's just the people in control of the various councils in those cities to get together, somehow get together, whether it's via LEPs or some other association to talk. Not so much at times compete, but see what are the real plus points of one city against another. Don't overinvest to try and compete with Doncaster, Rotherham, Barnsley, Sheffield, but see what's got the hot spot for expanding their bit of the city as you do something that's complementary in yours. So devolution, no. It'd be over-administered. We'd be talking about it for 10 years, a bit like the fifth runway at Heathrow, and politically would be overtaken by something called no common sense. I just don't see it.
So football has made a bigger difference to Manchester than devolution?
Manchester and Greater Manchester is bigger. Yeah. Yes, and you've said it, football has made a difference.
Okay.
Yeah. It has brought in so much international investment.
David.
I just observe in respect of devolution that Yorkshire's not grasping some of the tools which economic rebalancing is being enabled by government. And it seems to be taking too long to sort out. I'm sure both people in the region are frustrated by that, but I think...
Do you disagree with Kevin? People from that, do you think devolution would be a boon to the city?
Sorry,
David.
Do you?
Yeah.
Well, if multi-million pound budgets are available for, you know, whether it's transportation, regeneration, and a conduit for quite substantial funds, I think, coming from central government. If you look at other regions and regional mayors where they have got that devolution consensus, then it's making a bloody big difference, I think, in a lot of other parts of the UK. And I think it is, insofar as that's happening there and it's not happening here, it has to be de facto holding it back, because there's no other route other than the local authority to be assisting the funding of regeneration and growth.
I like this divergent views on the panel. Max, where do you stand on devolution?
I'm not going to pretend to know loads about it. I think, at the same time, what's wrong with a bit of competition, I guess, is what I would say, is why if Rotherham and Doncaster are competing, why is that not mutually beneficial for both cities? Or both towns, sorry. And why is that not beneficial for Sheffield as a wider city? I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be devolved in order for everything to improve for everyone. If people are competing, you know, the human race got to where it was by competition. Competition can be a very healthy and very good thing, provided that it is within the right controls and that there is an element of working together as well. But I think, you know, why can't there be competition?
I think you can still compete within the devolution consensus, but if in the current settlement we have, the route to additional resources to support your economy and the very substantial discrepancy in productivity across the UK between north and south. If that's, you know, that support is going to come from central government, we need it to come from central government, whether it's in our, as I say, in our transportation or in other funds. And you're denying yourself that opportunity. You're not only preventing yourself competing with each other, but also competing out with as well. I mean, you can compete within that. There's a, in other regional areas, perhaps they might structure themselves differently. But you're right. You know, these towns are big towns and got their own muscle. They don't have to lose identity. I don't think anybody would be suggesting that.
Okay, Kelly, devolution, yes or no?
Devolution, absolutely yes. I think it's nothing short of a travesty, really, that we've lost the opportunity for, I think it was about £900 million to come into this region. I think a challenge for our region, which perhaps others don't have, is that Sheffield City region, it's not like Manchester or Birmingham, where there is that clear leader of a huge city, which, frankly, you know, as a Boltonian, I can say this, if Bolton chirps up, you know, Manchester's going to give it a clip round the ear and tell it who's boss. In Sheffield, that is not going to go down well with Doncaster and Barnsley, and that's really what we've stumbled into. So I see it as almost a systematic problem, particularly where you haven't got a monocentric system like Manchester, like Birmingham, where there's a natural leader and everyone to an extent has to fall into line. I think Sheffield City region is different, and we have failed to overcome those systematic problems. I think as well, the danger here is that we sort of blame the system, we blame the politicians, and I think as business leaders and as residents in these places, we do need to look to ourselves a bit more and think, well, yes, we've sat on panels, we've sat in the pub and had conversations about devolution, but what have we actually done as a community to hold the politicians to account, to say this is not good enough, we're not happy with this? So I think we can probably all reflect on, you know, what action could we be taking, you know, from other political movements where they have actually made change happen. I think really we've probably let ourselves down in terms of just letting it drift, letting it happen before our eyes. And it'll be interesting to see. I think the consensus now is Sheffield City region, you know, that's not worked in terms of devolution, so the push now for one Yorkshire. But my worry is, if there's been all this infighting at the Sheffield City region level, I don't feel full of confidence that we're going to make it work for one Yorkshire, but we cannot be losing this investment. That cannot continue. I think in some parts of Yorkshire, the transport investment is about seven times less than London. Like we should be screaming about this, not politely just, you know, accepting the situation as it is. So I feel quite passionately that we shouldn't just sit back and accept this.
At a point there, really, if your mayor is elected on a regional basis and he hasn't actually got that endorsement, how can you make that, you know, do that lobbying? I think it's
Part-time even. Not full-time like some others.
It makes the case, doesn't it?
Okay. What does the audience think? Would devolution boost investment into the city? Hands up, yes. I'll just check. No. Come on. About two-thirds of you are sitting on the fence. Are you undecided or unable to raise your arms? Let's try again. Who thinks devolution would benefit the city? Okay. I won't force you into no. So it's split. John, imagine you were hanging up your suit in a few short weeks' time and you were able to speak freely amongst close friends and colleagues. Would devolution be of benefit to the city?
Well, when does this Estates Gazette go to press?
January? Or maybe next week?
The question, devolution, yes, but all devolution is to me is it gives you the tools to do the job. And for that to be effective, you need to know what's the job you're going to do and what's the tools you need. Otherwise, it becomes a bit of a fig leaf. And the way devolution has been done in this country, it's delegation, it's not devolution. And you know, it's proving difficult because the government put so many rules around it. You know, you can do things your own way as long as you fit this model. So Sheffield City Region got to the starting line. You know, I thought we crossed it, to be frank, and you know, I'm really disappointed that we still aren't over that starting line. Manchester, Birmingham, and now Liverpool have, you know, breasted the tape on this one. Mm-hmm. West Yorkshire haven't got to the starting line yet. The North East got to the altar and divorced. So you've got a north of Tyne devolution. So, you know, Newcastle Gate said, apart from the bridge, tell me the difference, but one's devolved and one isn't. How crazy is that? So this is not a why is devolution proving so difficult for Sheffield question. It's a question of why is devolution proving so difficult in the country. I think partly because the offer is too constrained, and partly it's not real devolution. It doesn't really excite people. It doesn't give you... Now, however, what I'm mindful of is that, you know, we probably do things evolutionary in this country, not revolutionary. So maybe it's the thin end of the wedge. Maybe it will grow to more stuff. But I also think having a city deal, a city region, as we do, it does give you that pre-endorsed quality with government. So if they want to give out money and they can't afford to give it to everybody, they'll give it to those who've qualified. And you saw that with the Transforming Cities Fund, where, I'll get the number slightly wrong, £1.8 billion made available from government. Those that had, in effect, gone the full hog on devolution, not us, got half the money just divided between them. No competition. There you are, there's the check. The rest of us have to compete for the remaining £900 million. And you'll get something between nothing and the maximum of your pro rata share. So for us, it's between naught and £200 million. We could have been walking away with £200 million on top of the £900 million. So... I'm a bit of a, when it comes to politics, I'm a bit of a pragmatist, you know, and when the government's got something that you want, and they say to get it, you've got to do this, as long as this isn't wholly offensive, do it to get that. And somehow, Sheffield City Region has stalled here, and I think the reason is, and I'll use the word maturity here, but I want to be clear, I'm not using the word maturity in a sense of people or politicians. I think when we tried to do the devolution deal, and we were the second one to do one, George Osborne announced at the Tory party conference, Manchester and us, and it's drifted since then. This place lacked the policy maturity to take it over the line. They hadn't quite sorted out what's the role of Barnsley, Rotherham, Doncaster and Sheffield. And as Kelly says, our geography is different, not unique, but it's different. It's not monocentric. And you know, just bear in mind that Doncaster's population is greater than the population of Newcastle upon Tyne. So it's not surprising that they get a little bit, you know, excuse me, don't forget about us. They may be classified as a town, but they are a big place. So we need a policy maturity that recognises those places. And just going to the question, from my experience, actually on the ground, on day-to-day issues, I don't think that Barnsley, Rotherham, Doncaster and Sheffield actually compete that much. But devolution has made it look, or lack of devolution has made it look like we just can't work together at all. And that's just not the case.
Okay, and it sounds like you're saying the prize isn't big enough to...
I think
to
the prize is too complicated.
...engineer further compromise.
I think the prize is too complicated. You know, you've got to have a mayor, you've got to vote this way. They even told us that we had to jettison Chesterfield. Chesterfield wasn't allowed to be in our club through some random rule drawn up, presumably in Whitehall or Westminster. So in Yorkshire devolution, I'll try and be agnostic on this, because I'm neither against it nor for it. That's a bit of a cop-out, but you know, the case hasn't really been made. But it's more relevant for us to be sat round the table with Chesterfield than it is with Scarborough. But under Yorkshire devolution, we'll be in an arrangement with Scarborough and North Yorkshire. Lovely places though they are, they're not part of our economy in a way that Chesterfield is, North East Derbyshire is, Derbyshire Dales are. And the rules say, yes, we can talk to them, but they've been forced to go into a different club. And into a well, I don't know where they want to go into the club they're in. They certainly did not want to leave this club. So the bizarre thing is self-determination, but you can't be in that club. It's a bit weird.
Okay, thank you. Time is always against us at these events, and there's a few more issues that that we've got to get through. And I want to bring you breaking news that on Radius, of course, from my colleague Emma down there, has just gone up, that CMS has agreed to take 47,500 square feet at Charter Square alongside HSBC. So it's not just advanced manufacturing. There's a strong professional services case as well there. David, how significant is that? Is that sort of deal for the city?
Really important. Really important that CMS see their future in Sheffield for the next period of their growth. Really important that there's available space for them. And those opportunities and pipeline in the city is frankly thin. But, you know, great opportunity for them there in absolutely the right place where occupiers and their staff want to be. People want to be where facilities are, where people want to come to work, where they can recruit and keep, and where communications are good too. So, I mean, they're absolutely bang on the button. And there was space for them, but there's a decline. You know, it's a fact in the city, you know, there is currently a bit of a declining availability of new space and pipeline. But it has the opportunity to do so. And, we hope to be part of new developments in that regard.
And does that encourage you to green light further developments?
Sorry?
Does that encourage you to green light further developments?
Well, it does, because it helps underwrite rental levels, which is a key part of viability, of course. So it's moving the market on, confirming where the market is. As I was saying before, you know, in the market, we're fighting against construction costs and other costs to be able to bring projects forward. But it's massively encouraging that there are, you know, occupiers in the market want to be in Sheffield, taking decent quantities of space, which can enable and leverage new schemes.
Kevin, you were talking about the need to be confident as well. That's an injection of confidence, isn't
Absolutely,
it?
Absolutely. Yeah.
How do you respond to that? I mean, how much confidence does it give you to bring forward sites and projects?
Depends what rent they're paying.
A good rent.
Oh, okay.
I'm scrolling. I'm scrolling. I can't see it yet.
It is all about Sheffield becoming more attractive. I mean, CMS have been with us for some years, but to take in new space, attractive space, better space, it's ours, David, to make the next phases of respective schemes even better and to put that in the market. Yeah, it's good news. Chose the wrong location, but...
John, can you give Kevin good news on rents?
Well, I'm just looking at Nalan. Am I allowed to... Is the rent... No. It's a new headline rent for Sheffield. So that's good news.
Absolutely.
Yeah, OK. So it's a new headline rent.
You can reveal it now.
It's probably a bit too commercially sensitive for that. And can I just... You know, I know you're disappointed, tongue-in-cheek, I guess, as to where they've gone. And you know, let's get it out there. They're in a building that we acted as the developer for. They're there on commercial terms. But whenever a CMS comes along or an HSBC or whoever it might be, I always say to them that wherever they choose in this city is the right place. And if they happen to choose our place, which is unsubsidised on commercial terms, that's great. And if they don't, that's great. We just enter to make sure they've got the richness of choice. And if we'd sat here and if they're in your building, or, you know, if David had built a building, I'd be no less happy than I am at the moment.
Are you retiring, John?
Are you offering me a job?
Yeah.
This could be another question time.
There's a headline. So you know, yeah, it's great news for Sheffield because it's a confidence boost, it's a headline rent, and it means that, you know, CMS are here for the next few decades, just like HSBC, locking them into a brand new building. And going back to some of the soft talent retention stuff, I think it's accurate to say that actually the staff satisfaction survey of HSBC within the UK has gone through the roof in Sheffield. So one of the reasons that office is busy is all of HSBC's staff are now trailing here to see what is it in this new office that is making staff happy, and happy staff are retained staff. And we have been told now that the Sheffield office has set the benchmark for HSBC.
Okay, thank you. Let's move on through a couple of other issues. And I think Richard Bracey is here and has a question. Richard, the microphone's just behind you.
Thank you. Good evening, panel. In the wake of the November flooding, what further measures will Sheffield City Council and the Environment Agency undertake to protect commerce and industry across the city region from extreme weather conditions?
Thank you. John, what is the council doing?
Can I start off with what the council did? So we had really bad floods in 2007. £400 million worth of damage to business in this city and £35 million worth of damage to public infrastructure in the city. Since then, we with the Environment Agency, and to their credit, they put the most money up. We've spent £21 million putting flood defences up along the lower Don Valley, middle and lower Don Valley in Sheffield. So you get the floods in 2019. The water levels are as high, if not higher, than 2007. We've got 24 houses flooded. And I think the claims from business to date total £400,000. That's probably the best £21 million that has been spent. However, more needs to be done. A bit more in Sheffield, on the Upper Don, but also on some of our smaller tributaries that caused relatively low-level flooding. What we are doing as a city is we're now moving upstream and doing a lot of work with the Wildlife Trust on the moors above Sheffield to hold the water back on the moors. And I was up there, ironically, 2 weeks before the event in November on a glorious sunny day. And they showed me the simple things like just planting loads of moss. And I was just staggered how much water that stuff holds. Now, that needs to be done on an industrial scale. So we know what to do. We just need to do more of it. Moving downstream, literally, through Rotherham and Doncaster, I think...
And who's the we there? The council, the Environment Agency,
well, I think the city council needs to lead it and coalesce. So the reason we got the Environment Agency to be so relatively generous is that Oliver Letwin, after the 2007 floods, came up when he was a minister, and we sort of cornered him. But we didn't corner him with saying, you need to do something about this. We cornered him to say, we're going to do something about this and you're going to support it. It's quite a different message. I think as you move downstream, the Rotherham challenges are, I think, about flood defences. I think as you get into the Doncaster area, you start to get into more profound challenges around a mixture of flood defences, very difficult hydrology there, and developments that have taken place on land 12 feet above sea level, on a river that is still tidal. So I think there's some more difficult questions there. We saw the 2007 flood as a wake-up call, and almost literally the morning after, we sat down saying, we can't let this happen again. I would say the flood defences that we put in were for a 1 in 100 event, so we've had two of those events now in 12 years, and they performed above their design standards. So if the constructor's in the room, thank you, and well done. So I suppose my message is, things can be done. We just need to do more of them.
Okay, we've only got a few minutes left, so let's deal with a few rapid-fire questions here. So Sheffield is forecasting that it will utilise its carbon budget within 6 years. Could a commitment to being a global leader in sustainable development generate a USP that sets itself above its competitors? Kelly, you started talking about differentiation. You started talking about well-being. Could sustainability be another important differentiator?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the other main agenda would be the green agenda. So yeah, if we can master both of those, I think that really is could be a USP. I think Sheffield can, I know we're already doing quite a lot, particularly led out of the universities in terms of sustainability. We're doing quite a lot around smart cities and, you know, getting into big data projects. So there's a heck of a lot happening with sustainability and the green agenda, which I feel we could be doing more. I know, you know, Manchester's doing huge projects around this and the smart cities agenda. So I'd say let's keep doing what we're doing, be very creative in it, and join up the universities with the business community, because we can't afford to ignore it, really. I mean, we are doing quite a lot already, and I think we're going to be introducing a clean air zone, so we're pushing through with some initiatives, but again, being, you know, let's be ambitious, let's be bold and steer the march on some of these other cities.
Thank you. Max, these things are starting to coalesce. Sustainability, tech, modern methods of construction popped up earlier on the questions. Do you see them coming together and them really leading the agenda in the years ahead?
Yeah, I think there's an element of caution you've got to exercise. I think there's examples in the past where developers have been carried away by incentivization to put green projects in, but you know, you can't shy away from the fact that the built environment is I think the biggest single carbon contributor in the UK, and so, you know, something
globally
has got to be done globally.
Yeah.
There you go, globally. So something, you know, has got to be done to make the built environment a more sustainable place to be, and I think that again can be interwoven with the quality of working spaces, the quality of living spaces. It can make everything better for everyone, but there has to be that incentivization. It can't just be for the sake of it. I'm thinking in particular, so I live in Putney in London. In Battersea, there is a tower with, I don't know if you know it, with the three turbines sort of built into the tower. They are never moving, and they never have moved because they built the tower effectively facing the wrong way. So the wind doesn't blow through it and they don't turn. That is, for me, the prime example of sustainability projects for the sake of it, and it's nonsense. It has to be put in the right place. It has to be committed spending in the right way. And I think the best way to do that is to incentivize it properly and not just have it on, you know, on a public sector level, but also in the private sector and have that flow through organically.
Thank you. David, what are you doing?
Really, I mean, we're all involved in the built environment here, and there's no doubt anybody who's been in a design team meeting, you know, will know that, you know, a massive proportion of that is revolving around the sustainability of a structure or place that we're creating, whether it's, you know, sud schemes, green roofs, you know, BREEAM rating, low energy consumption. It's what tenants want, you know, I mean, apart from what it is that we want to do, it's what tenants want, it's what investors want. And it's what the community wants as well. I too have got some sort of caution about some modular building approaches, and you know, look at a lot of older property which we can knock around and bash around from, you know, whether it's from Georgian, Victorian, Edwardian, post-war periods, which we're still all living in, knocking around, refurbing. And I think one of the big things that the country needs to do is look at the insulation of older property, both on commercial and residential, because it exists and a lot of it's, you know, leaky, poor energy efficient, and I suppose it'll have to be a government initiative one way or another. It should be individual occupiers who want it for themselves, but it may need a lot of elbow grease from the government, I think, to improve that, and I think there's a massive win to be had there.
Okay, thank you. We're just about out of time, but I want to end on an uplifting note. So I'm going to ask each of the panellists very quickly to make a very quick 30-second maximum elevator pitch. If you were pitching Sheffield to an investor and or an occupier, how would you do that? Kevin, kick us off.
Universities, football club, big district.
Club singular.
And spirit of the people. South Yorkshire folk, Sheffield in particular, are good people. They're pretty straightforward. They may have at times compared to some who have too much BS, but you're good people, so that's what I'd do to sell it around the nation. Come to Sheffield.
David?
Great, compact, accessible city, unique character, great historic context, unique places, fantastic public realm, unique actually public realm from any other city that I come across in the UK. Good place to be, good people.
Kelly, you said what you wanted it to be. Is it close enough today to advocate that?
I think there's a lot of work still to be done on that, and I've said my well-being vision for the city. But I take that more for myself as a, you know, a business leader. We chose to open up an office here 2 years ago. I had to sell that proposition to the Shoesmiths board. What Sheffield wasn't on their agenda, so why come as an occupier? And that was twofold, really, telling them that the talent was here in terms of the professional services. There were good lawyers here who, you know, Shoesmiths should be recruiting. And also the clients, the developers here, there's a lot of good work that's happening. So there was enough here to attract Shoesmiths, and long may it continue.
Thank you. Max?
Well, I'm not from Sheffield, so I'm not going to give a business case for Sheffield. But, you know, on the panel and in the room today, I've heard a lot of people who are very, very proud of the city. And, you know, there is obviously a lot to be said for Sheffield. But the unfortunate bit for me, I guess, is that a lot of that stuff I didn't know. And, you know, for me, I guess
I really want to, people to start investing in this city and start looking at it in the light that obviously you guys see it and everyone else sees it. And I think, you know, for me as an agent, obviously I want to start working in Sheffield and actually getting people putting their money into Sheffield in the same confident way that everyone else here has.
And John, what would you like to see? And how would you like to see this industry engage with your successor?
Generously and constructively, and treat them as someone who can make your proposals happen, which means go with them with proposals. Don't go to them with critiques or ask them what they're going to do for you. Can I answer your question now?
No, I've got another one. I'm more interested in...
I've got it in there now, you see.
You can come back, though. I'll let you finish with that. And what will you be telling your successor about the people in this room?
Listen to them. I'm going to go back to your opening comments. I'm not saying this because you said it, but I was speaking to Alexis and Martin late last week about this, so they know this is the case. Actually, get in bed with the Sheffield Property Association, because I spoke at the SPA's first anniversary, and my line to them was, you've had a great first year, but you may have that difficult second album moment coming, which is actually you positioned yourselves really well as a critical friend that doesn't champion the causes of individual members and maintains the big picture and doesn't get caught up in the weeds. And actually, you had a great second album. You've stuck to that. So actually, don't see them as a member organisation that's going to bellyache about the lack of potholes now in the city. But if imagine we did have potholes or stuff like that, they're going to come to you with strategic proposals. Listen to them, challenge them, but be prepared to be critically challenged by them. So my simple message is, and I've got a list of meetings I do in my office, which I'm handing over to my interim successor. And I've arranged cover for all the meetings, but I've asterisked a few, which are the ones to say, you go to this. And the SPA is one of those. In fact, if I'm honest, it's the only one in the commercial field that I've asterisked. The others are more in the health and public sector field. So that's what I've said. Well, that's what I've said to them in terms of the interim. The real deal, if you like, the permanent, won't be in post for another 6 months or so.
OK, I'll let you have 15 seconds for your pitch.
OK, right, OK, pitch, right. Safest city in England, highest apprenticeship rate in England, second only to Bristol for employment rates, better value than Leeds and Manchester with the same quality and design values, and one third of the city in a national park, which makes us unique amongst any major city in England. If there was a slogan, it is, be part of the secret. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I promise not to overrun. I have apologies. I think it was worthwhile. Thank you for your questions and being here. Thank you to our partners, Shoesmiths 574, powered by LSH, Sheffield City Council, Scarborough Group International, and Sheffield Property Association. Thank you to our panel. And before you thank our panel, can I just invite Martin McCurvey up to the stage very quickly? And he has something brief to say.
We should be truly proud of. Yeah, is that better? Okay. I want to thank EG, Damien and his team, all the speakers, Alexis, and importantly to you all for attending. This evening is an important moment in the life of our city. I suspect it will be one of the last times we see John publicly before he leaves us to fend for ourselves. On behalf of the Sheffield Property Association, I wanted to take the occasion to say a few words and to present John with a small gift as he retires from his role as Chief Executive of Sheffield City Council. I'm not entirely sure what one does when speaking on behalf of an association of 80 members to mark the retirement of a city leader, but let us hope I can trigger the right type of blushes. Everyone here this evening will know John and the impact he has had on our city over a long and distinguished career. For over a decade, we have had the benefit of his wise and measured counsel. Like a lot of things in life, I suspect we have at times taken it for granted. At times, dare I say it, John has been thoroughly frustrated. But that's the prerogative if you're chief executive. Wouldn't we all have loved to have been a fly on his wall over the last 11, 12 years? Many of you in this room, with others, probably queued up to his door, proclaiming that support for that idea that was essential at the council back, or talking about all those fantastic projects and schemes that the council must get behind. We do look forward to John's memoirs. Be warned, many of you in this room may very well feature in them. It is a little known fact that once the Sheffield Property Association first became a twinkle in the eye of a few of us, the very first person we approached was John. We wanted and sought his input. Why was that? Because we knew that there was absolutely no point doing what we have now done if our town hall and our chief executive did not see the association as being relevant, a force for good, and an asset for our city. And as a matter of courtesy and respect, we wanted John to know that we were not barbarians at the gates of the town hall with a flaming torch. Over a sausage sandwich one morning, we looked at John, he looked at us, and without any sense of drama, he said, "Crack on." I know he will agree that that is exactly what we've tried to do as an association since that day. We've not always agreed, but I can say without hesitation, we have always welcomed his candour and his friendship. And for that, we are truly grateful. John will shortly step away, and as he does, we thank him for all that he has done for us over the last decade and more, looking after our city through some challenging financial times, but towards a brighter future in which we have all got a role to play. Might I also say that much of what we talked about this evening might not have been the subject of discussion if it had not been for what John has brought to our city over the last number of years. As I invite him to come up to receive our small acknowledgement and thank him for all his efforts, I do now need to encourage the blushes. It's time to bring out a quote from one of his favourite singer-songwriters.
There we go.
Yes, you've guessed who it is, Dolly Parton. Dolly once concluded, "When I've got something to say, I'll say it." I think that sums John up perfectly. It was never about making a scene or seeking the limelight or shouting loudly. No, it was always thoughtful, measured and respectful, and all done with an impeccable style over many years. And I know I can speak on behalf of everyone here this evening to thank you, John, sincerely for all you have done for our great city. We wish you a long, healthy and happy retirement. Thank you. Thank you, Michael.